Thank you for helping us make Budget Again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for more than 2.5 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to standing with you again in 2011. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc. There's no doubt about it. The United States is an overwhelmingly religious nation. We certainly have our religious affiliations. Are they reflected accurately in those that represent us politically? In a few minutes, we're going to be asking you whether or not the religious affiliation of your congressman or your senator matters to you during open lines. In the meantime, Alan Cooperman joins us to talk about the religious composition of the 112th Congress. He's director of research for the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life based in Washington, D.C. Alan, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. Great to be with you.
Well, the political makeup of Congress certainly has changed with the last election. What about the religious composition of the new Congress?
You know, not so much. It's pretty similar to the last Congress and remarkably representative of the nation as a whole. What I mean by that is the nation today is about 51% Protestant, a slight majority of Protestants, and the same thing is true for Congress. Actually, Congress is about 57% Protestant. There are 304 Protestants out of 535 members of the House and the Senate. The nation is about a quarter Roman Catholic, and the same is true for Congress. There are 156 Catholics in the new Congress. That's about 29%, a little more than a quarter of the Congress.
Is there any religious group that is disproportionately, well, or overrepresented, at least as compared to the general population?
Yeah, there are actually a few groups. The one that sticks out is Episcopalians. So Protestants as a whole are about the same percentage, but Episcopalians are a declining percentage of the total U.S. population. They're now a little less than 2% of the U.S. population, and they're about 8% of members of Congress. Presbyterians as a whole are also numerically overrepresented in Congress, and Jews as well are overrepresented. Jews represent a little less than 2% of the U.S. population in general numbers, and they're about 7% of Congress. Mormons are maybe a little bit overrepresented. They're about 2% of the U.S. population as well and about 3% of Congress. There are about 15 Mormons. Well, there are 15 Mormons now in the House and Senate.
Since the Protestants comprise about half, how do they break down denominationally in Congress?
That's a great question, Todd. The largest groups denominationally are Baptists in first place and Methodists in second place, and those are, roughly speaking, the same as in the population as a whole. One difficulty in making some of these comparisons is that for the general population in the United States, we have very specific numbers because when we do our general population surveys, we ask people to give us specifics, and we can break down to how many Southern Baptists there are and how many American Baptists there are and how many United Methodists and so on. For Congress, we just go by what the members tell us, and some members say they're just Baptists, some say they're Methodists, some say they're just Protestants, some say they're just Christians. And so we have a little bit of apples and oranges problem here. But generally speaking, it looks like it's pretty commensurate with the population as a whole.
Any none of the above? What can you tell us about them?
That's a really interesting category and probably the biggest difference between Congress and the general population. In the general population now, the group of people who say that they have no particular religious affiliation, it doesn't mean they're not religious, but they're either atheists or agnostics, or they're kind of the none of the above. They're the nones, no particular religion. They're a growing portion of the general population. They're about 1 in 6 Americans, 16%. In Congress, Congress, we have very few of those, perhaps because, unlike the general population, members of Congress are answering these questions in a public way, and their names are associated with the answers, and so they are more precise. We have no member of Congress, not a single one, who identifies himself or herself as unaffiliated. We have six members who don't specify what their religion is, and I can't guess what that means. So we have six unspecified. We have one member of Congress, Representative Pete Stark of California, who is both a Unitarian and a self-identified atheist. He says he does not believe in a supreme being. He's the only member, the first member of Congress to publicly take that position. If you add those six people up with Representative Stark and, as well, that's seven. That's about 1% of all the members of Congress. So about 1%, you could say, maybe is unaffiliated compared to 16% of the general population.
So the picture here is of a Congress, House and Senate, that is overwhelmingly religiously affiliated. That's all the more we can say, really.
That's right. Overwhelmingly religiously affiliated and certainly majority Christian. If you add Protestants to Catholics, you've got, roughly speaking, three-quarters or more of the Congress is Christian. That's true for the nation as a whole as well. You also have, over time, while not a lot of big differences between the 111th Congress and the 112th Congress, over time, Congress's religious composition has been changing. The percentage of Protestants has been dropping. So as recently as, the 1980s, two-thirds of the American public was Protestant. Today, it's only about half the population is Protestant. Similarly, back in the 60s, three-quarters of the Congress was Protestant. Today, it's a little more than half is Protestant. The percentage of Catholics has been holding pretty steady in Congress, but generally speaking, Congress has been becoming more religiously diverse. Some of the smaller religious groups in the nation, which were not represented in Congress numerically in the past, are today. So there are now three Buddhists in the U.S. Congress. There are two Muslims in the U.S. Congress. And as I already mentioned, there's one self-identified atheist in the Congress.
Is it fair to say that the decline in the Protestant representation over those decades has been that the gap created there has been filled in with the more religiously diverse affiliations?
That's right, because the percentage of Catholics has remained roughly static. It's a little higher than in the general population. As I said, it's about 29% of Congress is Roman Catholic, and in the general population, it's about 24-25%. But yes, there's been over time a decline in the percentage of Protestants and growing diversity, growing representation of some of these smaller groups. Also, it's a little tricky because there are a fair number of members of Congress, and it's been a growing group that identify themselves as just Protestant, and we don't really know who those folks are. It's possible that accords with the growing percentage of the U.S. population affiliated with non-denominational Protestant churches, but we have only two members of Congress who specify that they belong to non-denominational Protestant churches.
Did you discover any major religious differences between the House and the Senate?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. The Senate is a little more Jewish, for example, than the House. Jews make up 12% of the Senate and only 6% of the House. There are also some interesting differences party-wise. So, for example, more than a third, about 34% of Democrats are Catholic, while 25% of Republicans are Catholic. And about 15% of congressional Democrats are Jewish, while less than 1% of congressional Republicans are Jewish. But the differences between the House and Senate are not dramatic. By and large, they both are representative of the country as a whole.
Do you think you'll need to add a few categories to kind of fine-tune this in the future in the unaffiliated and then perhaps a category of atheist all its own?
Well, we have those categories when we talk about the general population. The trick here is that members of Congress give us, you know, however they identify themselves. They don't necessarily fit into exactly the same categories that we, if you will, force the general public to fit into. In the general public, when someone tells us that they're a Christian and that's their first answer, we mark them down as a Christian, but then we ask them a further question and we say, and which denomination are you affiliated with? Now, they can say none or they can kind of opt out at any point, but we try to drill down. With members of Congress, in a sense, we get just one shot. We ask them, what's your religious affiliation? They tell us what they tell us, and we don't have an opportunity to force them or prod them to be any more specific. So we could add all the categories and wish that we could have greater specificity, but we just have to work with the way that these people identify themselves publicly. And some of those identifications are, again, a little bit different than in the general public. We see a rising percentage of members of Congress who say they're just Protestant, and that may be partly because the importance of denominations is, generally speaking, declining in American life. Maybe it isn't so important to people anymore whether someone is a Presbyterian or a Methodist or an Episcopalian or a Congregationalist. That could be part of what's going on. It could be for political reasons that they just think it's better to say, I'm just a Protestant, than to give a specific denomination.
Well, when we come back, we'll find out from our guest, Alan Cooperman of the Pew Forum, why many of our recent liberal presidents belong to conservative church bodies. Well, some recent conservative presidents belong to more liberal church bodies. Then in about 5 minutes, I want your answer to this question. Does your congressman's or senator's religious affiliation matter to you? Your answer to that question. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, the 13th of January. Leave your answer to that question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesETC, facebook.com/issuesETC. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or in about 5 minutes, give us a call and answer the question, does the religious affiliation of your representative matter to you? 1-877-623-MYIE.
Mr. Politician, please don't deceive us, Mr. Politician.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Pop spirituality teaches you to look inside yourself. True spirituality teaches you to look outside yourself to the person and work of Jesus Christ. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is titled Lutheran Spirituality, Life as God's Child. You can purchase Lutheran Spirituality by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, Lutheran Spirituality.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Abortion and the States.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Since Roe v. Wade in 1973, over 53 million unborn babies have died. Pro-life citizens and legislators have worked to stem the tide at the federal level. But in 37 years, Congress has produced only three significant victories, including the Hyde Amendment and the ban on late-term abortions. As important as those federal victories are, state legislatures have been far more successful in restricting abortions. Most states require parental notification, counseling for a woman seeking an abortion, and a waiting period before receiving an abortion. Listen next time for more on what states can do.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking with Alan Cooperman, Director of Research for Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, based in Washington, D.C. Get ready. In just a few minutes, we're going to have you answer this question. Does your congressman's or senator's religious affiliation matter to you? It'll be open lines for the remainder of this hour. Alan, as a researcher, how do you explain that two recent presidents who were more liberal politically belonged to a conservative church body, the Southern Baptist Convention, and that's both Jimmy Carter and President Bill Clinton, and then the more recent conservative presidents were members of more liberal church bodies, Ronald Reagan, Presbyterian Church USA, George H.W. Bush, the Episcopal Church USA, and George W. Bush, the United Methodist Church?
Well, you know, one of the things going on is that, as I said, the importance of denomination in American life seems to be declining, and every denomination, every major Protestant denomination in the United States has a kind of split running through it and has a kind of liberal wing, if you will, and conservative wing. And one of the ways that you might identify or think about these wings is basically on social issues. But certainly there are renewal or evangelical elements, groupings within all of the mainline, and that is traditional Protestant denominations, including the Methodist Church, including the Episcopal Church, et cetera. And so you can have political conservatives within wings that are theologically conservative as well within what are, in general speaking, liberal churches. But I would like to say, you said, for example, that Bill Clinton was a member of the Southern Baptist Church. When Clinton was president here in Washington, he and Hillary Clinton attended the United Methodist Church here in Washington. When George W. Bush was in Texas, he attended a Methodist church, but at earlier times in his life, he'd attended different churches, not necessarily Methodist. And when he was here in Washington, he attended most often an Episcopal church, but in fact, he wasn't a regular, interestingly, people may know, he wasn't a regular churchgoer at all here in Washington. He tended to pray privately at Camp David, and officially the White House at that time said he didn't want to disturb any congregation with the high security measures that would be needed, but he never joined a Washington congregation. Barack Obama has not yet joined a Washington congregation either, just as his predecessor had not.
Do you, just curiously, do you happen to know which of the presidents in recent history was the most church-going president while president?
Well, that's a tricky issue because, as I mentioned, for example, with George W. Bush, who generally speaking was, I think I'm safe in saying this, thought of as being a very religious president, he actually was not a regular churchgoer at any Washington congregation. He went occasionally to St. John's Episcopal Church, which is on Lafayette Square outside the White House, quite close to the White House, but most of the time he prayed privately. For example, at Camp David. So it's hard to say whether he was a regular churchgoer or not. He didn't attend a Washington congregation. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton went quite regularly to a Washington congregation, Founder United Methodist Church. So in that sense, they were more regular churchgoers. But I can't say how often they prayed or, you know, make any kind of comparison. And I certainly don't want to tread into deeply political waters by suggesting anything about the underlying religiosity of any of these people. I'm not inside their heads.
No, none of us are. Alan Cooperman is Director of Research for the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, based in Washington, D.C. You can read Pew Forum's new survey, Faith on the Hill, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Alan, thanks.
Thank you, Todd.